which I thought was the last place I'd have to look, never the one, because of Edwards. I believed that George was, well, I found out, finally found out, that the blacks, it was mixed, black and white, racially mixed, and I found out that the blacks weren't talking to the whites and vice versa, and they hated each other. And that they were after revolting. Also, the confidential records were disappearing from there and they turning up in the hands of black militants. And I would get a report, and this has happened, facts there in a group would get a report, I don't know from the same guy or not, would be just the opposite to mine. And it took us a little time, to figure out what was happening, because they must have thought I was a goddamn liar, whoever, you know, sat in that chair. And you had these young groups, well, all ages. Hell, everybody was noting. The Cotillion Club, the social elite of the black community, which is, you know, they have a ball and they have debutantes and they do little scholarship things. And by God, if they didn't get a militant committee going of police community relations, and each group, look, one of the trouble is I had a hard time convincing those I didn't know that we weren't adversaries in this goddamn thing. Look, we got a problem. I recognize it. You recognize it. Let's see if we can't find a way that'll work out, because they think all you got to do is snap your fingers, you know, and say, don't do that anymore with your thousands of people who are tradition-bound, and you can stop it that way. It's a son of a bitch to stop. These guys are hard to handle. I can screw you in 90 ways. So you got to... And... You gotta back them, if you possibly can, or you've got no morale or no police department, and get them to do the thing right, and satisfy the other people. You just can't call somebody in and say, look, tomorrow we're all gonna tip our hats every time we you know, pass a black person. It doesn't work out that way. They had issued an order that, after I left, they had their names sewn on their shirts. They just now got an arbitration in the thing, so they're just now doing it. That's 3 years almost from the time the order went out. And you're dealing with a lot of very biased people. But, and a lot of good ones.
Ray, was CCR of any help to you in the summer of 67 in terms of intelligence about what was happening on the streets?
Frankly, no. I think I will get more information on my own telephone. And I'd say the police weren't too good either.
Mm-hmm.
No. I knew, I was very, I ought to mention this, I was very suspicious. One thing bothered me a lot in 67. Well, of course, that we had the blue flu, you know, which could have been avoided, but wasn't. And that was a bastard thing to go through. And then we, because the city just wouldn't recognize the fact that the police department now was a union, the legislature giving them the right to collective bargaining. What the hell? That's unionism, except that they didn't have the right to strike. So they, very easy to get around that by being sick.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a hell of a time getting any, working out any intelligence from the black community. They were, you know, so resentful of the police. We couldn't, couldn't break in. And I used everything I knew to do. I had, fortunately, friends both legitimate and criminal. But the thing that bothered me was this, that the really, the most, for want of a better term, radical or militant groups or individuals hadn't been in to see me that summer. Mm-hmm. Now, I was so goddamn busy with the, you know, the food and everything else, as you are over there, that I sent word and I made inquiries. Why hadn't anybody been in? Ask them to come in. Some, or if there's some reason they don't want to come in anymore, I'll go meet them. You know, under the Belle Isle Bridge at midnight if they want to talk. I think that many of them reached the point that there's no use talking anymore. Let's burn this son of a bitch down. Maybe that'll get their attention. I think now. But there wasn't a hell of a lot more I could do about that. You couldn't change a thing any faster than we were because, oh, Jesus Christ, we did things in that police department that were just unheard of. I mean, taking people to the trial board for mistreating a citizen, not only that, but firing him even, or suspending him 6 months or 10 months, and transfers all over the place, which makes it rough because a transfer can, that kind of transfer, can make their, can reduce their, what's it called, their points that they get for good, for being a good policeman. They go to another precinct and they drop about 10 right off the bat because they're new there. It's a bad theory. I don't think it should work that way, but it does. They then all that's added up when it's time for them to be promoted. Mm-hmm. And if they have been transferred a lot, they get a lousy, harder time being promoted.
Ray, can I interject a question before I forget it? You mentioned how the civic leaders, the black leaders, had failed in Detroit just as they'd failed in every other city. Is that
the day of the riot?
Yeah, on the day of the riot. Yeah. Is that because the proletariat that was doing the riot, they had lost confidence in their leaders, or the leaders were out of touch with the proletariat, or what?
I'm sure both. I'm sure that the rioters on 12th Street, the morning that these people went out to talk to them, looked at them as Uncle Tom, mm-hmm. as captives of the whites. Mm-hmm. And I will generalize, at least in theory, that this is why they're not. It's the tough militant who can persuade them to take tough action, and not the preachers.
Wasn't it also true, Ray, that the black establishment leaders were not identifying the rioters as their people? They were saying, these are criminals, it's not a racial question. And they were the ones who were demanding harsh action.
You mean on that morning?
Yes.
Yeah, that's true, except that like the day before that, if one of those awful criminals, or say three of them, had jumped a policeman and two other policemen came to his aid and the three criminals, all these wonderful high echelon people who would be in with fire in their eyes protesting brutality. Now, how the hell do they know it's brutality? Could I tell? There's a fight. How do you know how many punches to throw? I went by the rule that once a guy isn't fighting anymore, you stop fighting too, because anything in addition to that, you're in trouble. And this was maybe not a fair way, but it was the most. It was a Ferris whack. But you see, there are some bad things happened during the riot, and naturally on both sides, but there were some bad excesses on the part of some police. Everybody's got a breaking point, and these guys can be walking down the street, mind their own business, and blow up a copper. They don't resign from the human race when they join the police department. And it's a lousy job, and considering their background and their training, They can blow up, too. Others do it. Where the police aren't supposed to. They're not allowed to. But it's understandable that sometimes they do. And those emotional, spur-of-the-moment things I can look at with a lot more understanding and tolerance and a plan. We'll make this son of a bitch tell us he did it if it takes us 3 days.
Ray, coming back to the question of black revolutionaries, were there movements and whereabouts under surveillance before the riot?
We had, let me get my timetable. We had some under surveillance, but it was a tough damn surveillance to maintain because we had practically no black officers. We didn't know the black officers we had well enough to know if we could trust them. This was the awful part about this and all other police departments. You say, gee, here's a guy, here's a hell of a good policeman, but can I give him a thing like this to do? One. Or if I give it to him, if you know his background and know that he's good and will stand up, the whole black community knows he's a cop. And as far as getting, I managed to get some informants. But I got some fairly good information, but you don't know how far you can trust them because they haven't proved themselves. See, it was a new experience, completely far away from police work. Nobody ever thought this was possible. I mean, going back years, it was an inferior race, and, they were kicked around. They weren't allowed in the police department. They were given the worst jobs. They weren't promoted. There was terrible discrimination. Even in getting in the police department. I like to think we overcame a lot of it, but this was a terrible thing for the people of Detroit. Because we didn't have the intelligence we should have. And not only didn't we have it, we had a hell of a hard time finding out who to send together or where to go together.
What I have in mind, Ray, is this, that to the extent that you did have some intelligence, is it possible, based on the movements and actions of the militants that you were aware of, that you can absolutely reject the conspiracy theory? In other words, on the basis of your intelligence, can you say that they were as surprised by the outbreak?
This was spontaneous, I'm convinced. I am convinced that this was not a conspiracy, that this was a spontaneous situation. You see, the very fact that one of the cops said, stop the car, on a hunch, the raid wasn't planned, and the whole thing hinged on that raid. Plus, a lot of other things I've learned, but I think the militants immediately got together once it had started. I think the telephones, the stores of guns and were not enormous and built up later. The Molotov cocktails were brought out. I think that an organization, not organization is hardly, Marty, would you open, she's got a handful of things, I think.
Well, thank you, Marty. It's nice to have the door.
Yeah. I'll be with you. Thanks, Frank. Yeah. I think that, groups would immediately, after it started, by immediately, 2 hours, 3 hours, when the word got around. You see, it didn't go on the radio. It was held there. They knew it. They censored themselves to keep people away. We didn't ask them to. We had asked them previously. Suggested to them, probably be a better way, that when we had racial trouble, it would be of great help to the city if they'd hold up, if they could. putting it on the air, because once it got on the air, it attracted crowds and it hampered the efforts of the police and the others to work to smooth it over. This didn't get on the air until, I don't know the time, but it was several hours after it had been going. And we had another one. There were 33,000 people at a doubleheader ball game. The Tigers were playing the Yankees. All right, what do? Do you tell them? Don't go on 12th. You know, you go panic them, and they're the riot. Who didn't know about the riot? Just from a lot of people didn't. And do you tell them? Don't go on, go by way of Grosse Pointe, because by the time they were going to get out of the ball game, we still had it pretty well confined to 12th, with the exception of one big fire on Linwood. And just a little looting there. But I decided to tell them that there's a little trouble. Nothing to worry about, but to go home by other streets in, I think, 12th.
Was that announced at the ballpark?
Yeah, Jim Thiele put down the speaker. That's a problem. What are you going to do? You got 33 that emergency. They might blow up on you, too. But, and then, of course, the National Guard. No, we'd worked very closely with the National Guard. Jesus. Man, the Lord. But they were up at Grayling.
Hello?
Summer camp.
No, I
didn't.
And... Yeah, I tell you what, of course I couldn't call you back because...
I was kind of...
No.
Reluctant. I don't know.
Of course. No.
And believe me, I've searched my mind about this, whether I should have just insisted to Jerry that he get the National Guard in here sooner. They couldn't have been here much sooner anyway. But, see, I've worked with the National Guard in so many stories, and I know what they are. I knew it would be slaughter if they came in. And it was. That I was trying to think, Jesus, can't we, can a miracle happen? And can't we, get to handle this thing ourselves?
When was that decision made, right? To call the guard? You had the state police in first, is that correct?
Yeah.
And that wasn't sufficient.
Oh, they, no. Well, it was in the morning, but it was late in the morning that we knew that we had to have them.
When did you notify and involve the mayor in all the decisions?
I called him before 7 o'clock and got him up that morning. He was... he came down. But we're criticized for not getting the guardian sooner. If we had asked for them sooner than we did, we couldn't have gotten them in Detroit. Because they were out in the field and they were spread around Grayling. And we couldn't have gotten them back much sooner than we did. And then, bad thing, I know enough about these operations to know that you don't commit troops piecemeal. But the way they were coming in Detroit and the way the city was going, we had to commit them piecemeal. And naturally they got chewed up. And this is what you do, but what we were doing was buying time. Now, this I can't verify, but I'm told by people in the police department who were there, I had to go to a meeting. I wanted to go out to the 10th precinct, see it, and also go to a meeting at the citizens in the police station. And the as to what they could do and what they wanted to do. And we had two kinds of citizens, pro-police and anti-police. We were already being called brutal. And this was early afternoon. We were already being called brutal, and we were already being told we weren't doing enough by this group and by, you know, citizens who were invited. The
do you care to name names?
Well, I don't remember. There were business people around the neighborhood. They were neighborhood.
Well, I thought you were referring to the black leaders.
No. No, at this meeting, it was a large one. It took up the whole basement. That is the auditorium part of the basement of the Liberty precinct. And there were people, business people and residents of that area. I would generalize this way, that the older people wanted us to do more, and the younger ones were the were claiming that we were brutal. And it's very possible that there had been some acts of brutality. By that time, I doubt it. I doubt it. Because
Had the first fatality occurred as yet?
No. No, the first fatality was a woman riding in a car on Woodward Avenue around Claremont. She was hit by a stray bullet. And it was that night, Sunday night.
Ray, along those lines, maybe I'm jumping
now,
ahead.
I may be wrong on my night. I think it was Sunday. I have to verify.
I recall writing that in my notes.
Yeah.
When I was doing this.
That it was Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the newspaper accounts look like every other person in the black community was a sniper. Yeah. How many snipers do you think there were, Ray?
10% of what we... what was the count? Whatever the count was, I'd say maybe 15% were actually snipers.
Of incidents reported.
Reported snipers. I'd say maybe... this has to be guesswork because there's no way to verify except... you see, it's, you know, street fighting in where there are a lot of buildings is a very tough way to fight.
Yeah.
And you had, when the National Guard came in, there were a bunch of country kids scared to death in the city anyway. I don't mean that they lack personal courage, but they're in a strange environment, let's face it. Somebody take a shot, it'd be dark, and somebody, you know, curfew we got in. So, boom, you take a shot at some, Jesus, sniper, boom, 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 at the sniper. Sniper goes all around. Then everybody's a sniper. But there were two kinds of snipers. There were the casual sniper who would be in his apartment drinking whiskey and then get up and take his rifle and stand back from the window. This was bad. They weren't coming up to the when you at night even you couldn't see a flash. It's new enough to stand back and go bang, 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 and then go back to his whiskey.
Aiming at anything in particular?
Well, it's preferably. But if he didn't have a target, he'd shoot anybody. And then there was the real smarty, and this was the dedicated guy who would pick a spot and take a shot, preferably at a cop or something that was going to do some damage, and then go like a bastard, disappear in the dark and without... And because they were, you couldn't calm down these, either the police, a lot of the police, or the National Guard. It was awful hard to get them calm. They'd concentrate their fire on the place where he was. Now, by this time, he's over in someplace else taking another shot. You don't have to have many smart people like that to do damage, and there is that kind of sniper.
Right, Hubert Black's book suggests that there was some organized sniping, coordinated sniping, at police stations around the city. He logs it by time to suggest that it was coordinated.
It could have been, yeah. You see, yeah, when the whole goddamn town's going that way, there could be so many coincidences that they don't, that the timing and all don't necessarily indicate to me that it's organized. But there is firing at some police stations. However, I think even that was exaggerated. I think, maybe I shouldn't say, but one lieutenant was calling from under his desk saying he was under fire. We sent everything out there and couldn't find a goddamn indication that the station had been under fire at all. And I don't think it was. However, I wasn't there, I can't say he's wrong. But he was down on the floor under his desk calling headquarters, and we were able to get an awful lot of stuff. He told us the direction it was coming from, so we could go in the back and everything. Couldn't find it. Maybe it had gone. But we didn't find the bullet marks either.
So the timelines that locked sites are merely reports, not necessarily verified.
That's it. The reports. And the radios were going so fast. There was never a second between. You know, they were just piled up. And you couldn't verify very much.
Could you verify, Ray, any of those reported instances of firing on fire companies?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't remember about the firing, but the rock throwing and the bottle throwing.
Uh-huh.
Fire departments, the first one, I think it was Sunday afternoon, pulled right out of a fire in Falsey. We couldn't by that time give them protection. And basically couldn't protect ourselves. So they were, and I've got a theory too that the fireman was shot through the head, and it's only a theory, was shot accidentally by I don't like to say, I think National Guard, but I can't, it's a theory.
Yeah, sure.
We couldn't get the damn bullet, so you couldn't mash it up with anything. When it was a through and through one, the bullet just disappeared.
Ray, how much manpower was diverted to the protection of public utilities?
Well, we...
excuse me just a second.
Go right ahead.
Let's get back to that morning. Do you want to shut it off? When the superintendent called me at 5 o'clock that Sunday morning, and I told him not to take them on the police off the east side, I was afraid, as I say, that this could be a diversion, that the main thrust might be on the east side. And on the east side, we have the waterworks, we have the Edison plants, we have the Belle Isle, the radio, east side radio, Belle Isle, police radio, that is. We had, Chrysler, Park Davis with all his narcotics, a lot of men, plus half the population in Detroit. So I couldn't see leaving.
No.
Leaving that, and I was afraid of that. Oh, all right.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you, sir?
Good. I didn't see him up there. So, I was kind of worried about that. Now, we were had to be very haphazard about that, like leave a man or keep it under. Our emergency, we got citizens. National Guard came, they took over.
There is something called the police reserve.
Which we built up. It's not opposed to because you can you get the screwballs. You make him he's an unpaid policeman in crisis. For a week, put through a program and got, I had over 1,000 teams. And they would go, and their job was to provide the utility. But I don't know whether they still have it. But the trouble wasn't keeping, we checked them out during, we got all kinds of applications. It's, oh,
10 minutes because I, 5 minutes because I want to, no, I don't want to over-retire you.
Oh,
you
know?
No, night.
No, it's, Adam and Johnny.
On the streets the night before the riot.
Yeah, I mean, it pointed me on the streets a great deal at night. Went out to see a friend of mine who had been held up on the Northwest. And we then drove through the 10th precinct. And I mean, really, it's a big precinct, but we covered an awful lot of it that night. Just to get the feeling of the streets. No particular reason. I did this frequently. The street, it was a hot night. The streets were crowded. The homes were hot. But the people all seemed, there didn't seem to be any hostility in particular. They seemed normal, friendly. There was no indication. It was a low crime night, too, in the whole city. For the 24 hours prior to the riot, there were only about four holdouts, as opposed to roughly 18 a night now, 18 or 20. But there was no indication, of course, and I still think that it was a just a combination of circumstances, with people on the streets who were very bitter people and who wanted to get something started and who did manage that night to do it. I think that despite all and the arbitrary Terry Cavanaugh had done, and the police had done, and many agencies of the city, under the mayor, had done to improve, and of course many, many black citizens, had done to improve race relations and correct so many evils. If it hadn't been that night, we'd have had a riot. Every city did. Large, practically every city, large and small, but all the large ones. And this just happened to be the occasion. But no racial incidents reported that night. Got the call. I got it from the superintendent of police about 5 o'clock Sunday morning. Trouble at Claremont and 12th. And he told me about the raid and said that they were fighting and he was getting people out. But unfortunately, it was beautiful weather. Many of them left for a day, and those who had 2 days off and already gone. Pardon me. But to get out of my home, I get hurriedly got dressed, and my phone kept ringing. My Chronicle, which is a black-oriented newspaper in Detroit, a weekly call. He wanted to get more men right out there and get rough and stop it, and the paper had the headline the following week saying it could have been stopped. He thought we should use more force. Ironically, his paper was constantly accusing the police of using too much force in prior and subsequent occasions. However, he said many people call and it's hard to get out. I went out and the first person I saw on the way to my car was Judge Wade McCree, a neighbor who was black, and I told him, it was still very early, I told him, I told him about it, so he was the first citizen outside of that time that he had looked in all reports. It was serious, and we were in for it, and I said, just go over to the cottage. We had a cottage in Lake Erie in Canada, but I knew that I wouldn't be home. So she said something that I hadn't thought of, and she was right. She said it was true because there are many, many inquiries as to where she's from. And a lot of violence occurring, whether she had left or whether she was there. And I think it was reassuring to people to know that she stayed there.
Ray, one of the events of the summer before the riot, the summer of a black husband at Rouge Park.
Yeah.
Do you give that much?
It was a horrible thing. I really resentment over it among black people, and rightly so. The police did work on it, worked on it hard, and did arrest and prosecute successfully the person who committed who murdered this black man. There was no fight. He just killed him. But by the time of the riot, wasn't really final. There was, in that crowd, were not prosecuted. But the prosecutor and the police crowd, and one man only, and they couldn't connect the others up with a criminal act, man who committed the murder, and that was their thinking, and that's why they prosecuted one, and they did it successfully. No, I don't think it did. And during the riot, we didn't have any of the usual, of the often accusations of police brutality, there wasn't anything that seemed to be voiced against the police during the riot. And it wasn't, of course, a race riot in the sense that one race, well, in 43, when in Detroit, when the blacks and the whites were fighting. This was a revolution, a riot by black people over, I think, the system.
You reject as cosmetic the claim made at the time that it was a truly integrated riot.
Well, I do. We arrested a few people, just a handful of white people for participating in the looting. there weren't many observed. You see, the looting and the burning were in black neighborhoods. And white people just didn't go in there and participate. Maybe they're afraid to. I don't know why they didn't, but they didn't. And, well, some whites got involved on the lawless side. There were very few. I could hardly say it was integrated unless, let's call it a tokenism.
And in the working class but integrated neighborhoods like Del Rey, there really wasn't any trouble.
And there wasn't anything down there at all. I saw black. You mean in the black part of Del Rey?
Well, it's kind of mixed.
Yeah, it is mixed. But there was no trouble down there at all. Those are people who own their own homes, too. But you see, I think that there's a large criminal element involved in it. There's no question about that. And a large militant element involved in it. But there's a large number of decent, law-abiding black people who had never been involved in criminal acts before. Certainly, as far as the police knew, because they had no records, and they had jobs and owned their homes and had no trouble. They got caught up in this awful hysteria.
Do you go along with the thought that the composition of the 12th Street neighborhood was rootless? That there were a lot of people who had just moved in and who really were not raised in that community.
Oh yes. Oh yes. That area is pretty transient. That is a lot of in the apartments on the street. There are a lot of transients. People who don't stay long. That, of course, is true of the city to such a greater extent than it used to be. And people who advocate the beat patrolman being out there say, well, he knows everybody in the neighborhood. Not anymore, he wouldn't. If we could have beat patrolman, fine. But they're in cars because they can do so much, cover so much more territory. And knowing the people is different because there's so much mobility in really in all parts of the city. But no, the people in the 12th Street area on that day did not have their roots there at all. It was predominantly white until after the World War II. Until after World War II. So the roots were not very, very deep. But many people who for the first time in their lives, black people, are buying their homes, can't afford, can't buy their homes, were doing it and are doing it in that area and took great pride in it, and they had lovely single and duplexes on the streets feeding into 12 and surrounding the area where the rioting was the worst. However, I've been concentrating on 12. We'll have to take the other parts of the city too, where the rioting was bad, because while it started on 12 and while the worst damage was concentrated there, it was very, it spread and it was very serious in other all black neighborhoods in the city. And of course the a lot of the wreckage is still there.